Off and rolling Tuesday, July 29, 2025 is the date. Welcome in to the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, Gabe Kuhn on X at Jam_Kuhn71. I'm alongside the executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. That would be Connor Dunning on X at CDunning99. Connor, how's it going, brother?
It's going great. It's going great. It's one of my favorite days of the year. It is Church Health Giving Day that
yes.
we are participating in. So highly encourage everybody to go to churchhealth.org to donate. All of your donations today will be matched, whether it's a one-time gift or a recurring gift, it will be matched.
Yes.
Help us invest in a healthier Memphis.
Yes, and also, if you're not just going to Church Health, go to 929ESPN.com and we'll have all the details there for you, and it can redirect you to the Church Health site as well. But always love today. Always love today. Earlier today, Jeff had had a doctor on to talk about it. So make sure that you go donate. Make sure you go donate. All of your donations will be matched by Church Health. But we have 3 hours to talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. Plenty to get to. Memphis basketball news off the top. We have Memphis and Auburn in a preseason exhibition. But on top of that, I don't know how you should feel about their out-of-conference and non-conference slate, considering we did have another hearing in the Sincere Parker aggravated assault vandalism case that we learned about last weekend. So we'll get through all of those details. We have some NFL to discuss. The Browns quarterback battle, if that's what you want to call it, is heating up. Kenny Pickett hasn't been on the field. Jimmy Haslam, the owner of the Cleveland Browns, spoke up on what got them to draft Dylan Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders in the first place. And he spoke up on how he feels this whole quarterback situation should figure itself out. So there's that. I also want to get to Happy Gilmore. Have you gotten around to Happy Gilmore, too?
No, I haven't had a chance.
Okay. Well, I think a lot of people are missing the point. I don't think you have had, even though you haven't seen it, Connor, I think you probably share that sentiment, right? I feel like a lot of people, the reviews I've been seeing, the response to it I have been seeing, I feel like a lot of people have missed the mark with what Happy Gilmore 2 was supposed to be 30 years after the original. But we'll talk about that. As far as guests are concerned, Jeff Calkins at 5 o'clock per normal on Tuesday. And then 6 o'clock per normal on a Tuesday, Christian Fowler will join. And we'll sort of recap what we saw last week with Taj Rael, the UTSA case, and the cheating going back and forth, the responses we saw at American Conference Media Days. By the way, Connor, what should we call the American Conference? Like, from a... We call it the American Conference or the American. That's what they want us to have. But an acronym. I'm so used to saying AAC. Is there anything? We can't call it the AC. That's what I turn on in my house. That's what I crank up in the summer here in Memphis. We call it the A? Like, what do we call?
What do we call the American Conference? So we could call it the A.
The A.
Yeah.
Like, what do we call it?
We could call it that.
I can't get AAC out of my vocabulary. Somebody help me with this.
Mm.
And the American is just, like, that's too much. Like, for every, the ACC, the SEC, the Big Ten, the, you know, Big 12. Like, everything seems to roll off the tongue. The American or the American Conference doesn't quite roll off the tongue like you want it to.
The big A?
The big A. The big A. You have to add the big in front of it. Oh, gosh. I'm going to stay. The A I kind of like. I kind of like the A. And you could go double entendre like you mentioned.
Yeah, I think that if we're going to go with the A, I think, it can have the double meaning.
Okay. All right. Well, there is that, and that is the show. Obviously, we'll have the Blitz at 6:30 and the trip around the NFL at 5:30 as well. Now, today we had an announcement made by the Memphis basketball program. Memphis basketball will meet Auburn basketball in a preseason exhibition game in Atlanta on October 30th. I love this, and I think considering all of the happenings, and we'll get to the Sincere Parker case in just a moment, considering all of the things that have transpired this offseason, the complete turnover of the roster, the lack of continuity, Nolan Smith out the door, Sincere Parker in and out, we'll see what happens with him with his aggravated assault case. It feels like the exhibition sort of ideas and what Penny Hardaway has done the past couple of years in creating these exhibitions with these big-time programs feels like this year it's more important than it ever has been. Because they're going to have to figure out who is going to show up and who's going to get something done before they actually play a meaningful game that counts against their record. Because I'm going to be honest with you, Connor. I don't know how to feel about this team right this second. I don't. Even if Sincere Parker's on it, I still have some hesitation. But if Sincere Parker is not going to be a part of the fold and he's not going to be scoring the amount of points he scored throughout his career, whether it was at SLU or McNeese State, I really have hesitation about this team. And here's the full non-con schedule for those that don't know. We expect a exhibition game to be announced against Arkansas for St. Jude here relatively soon. It's been talked about, so we'll throw that in there. Auburn and Atlanta, those are the exhibitions. Then home, you're going to have Baylor, Vandy, San Fran, UNLV, among some cellar dwellers, the New Orleans, Alabama State, Southern Illinois. Neutral, you'll have Purdue, Texas Tech, or Wake Forest. And then away, you have Louisville, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Utah State. I you know, as opposed to last season, I had high hopes about what they were going to conference in the non, accomplish in the non-conference slate of their schedule last year. PJ Haggerty, you felt okay about. Dane Danger, you wanted to see it come to fruition, but he hadn't gotten a lot of playing time at Illinois. You knew that he could, you know, be something. You also had Colby Rogers, who knocked down a three at a high level. You had Tyrese Hunter, who you knew what to expect from. This was a highly touted guy who ended up at Texas. He was at Iowa State originally. Like, you knew he was a 12-point-per-game scorer. He could set up offense. He could knock down a three. Like, you had some comfortability with the non-con schedule last year. I am not comfortable with this particular team playing the non-conference schedule that they're slated to play at this moment. It's unfortunate that I feel that way, but I think anybody who's being honest with themselves would tell you the same thing. You don't know where the points are coming from. You don't know who's going to play big. The roster could become very thin, not only in the front court, they're already thin there, but in the back court, if Sincere Parker is no longer a part of this team going forward, that could get very thin very quickly. I'm telling you, like, I like that these schedules are put together the way they are. You have to do it when you play in the A, right? And the conference slate does nothing for you. But this non-con schedule scares the hell out of me, considering the team that's been put together.
I think the big comparison that we've been making to last season, and the reason I feel a lot of us have a little bit more, you know, caution when it comes to this team and trying to predict what the season may look like, is there are just way more question marks on this team than there were last season. Last year, you did have a high turnover rate. You really only had one mainstay guy in Nicholas Jourdain, but you knew that you were getting proven commodities that were coming in to play basketball for the University of Memphis, and you understood how they would all fit together. Like, when you saw it on the piece of paper, you could visualize it and you could see it on the court. There was relatively no drama last offseason. You know, you had the Tyreek Smith situation, but then they cut bait from that pretty quickly, so it really didn't have any cloud over the season whatsoever. I think this go around, and again, we want to absolutely give credit here. Penny has done an amazing job with this non-con schedule.
The pivot, considering no returning players or returning starters, is still impressive.
Yeah, I
don't want to take away from.
So I'll get to the roster. So I'm talking about, like, specifically the schedule. He's done a tremendous job building it because he understands that you need to give yourself some sort of safety net, or at least give yourself the ability to create a safety net for yourself with your non-con schedule, because we know that in the A, it is absolutely terrible, and one or two losses in that conference can be devastating for you overall when you're trying to get in to the NCAA tournament as far as seeding or as far as getting in as a, you know, just an at-large bid. Like, if you lose a couple of games in the American, you're screwed. And so you're trying to build as many parachutes for yourself in non-con as you possibly can, and he's done a tremendous job of doing that. I think the biggest difference is, though, we just don't know what this team's going to look like. And this team is full of a bunch of guys who, unfortunately, have more questions than answers when it comes to their game. A lot of them have high potential and could become something special when they're here at Memphis. You know, we've talked about a few of these guys ad nauseum because we're trying to figure out who the X factor could be, who the main guy is going to be, especially now with the Sincere Parker news, who's going to be the guy that's going to step up and try to replace him if he's not going to be able to be on the team, who's going to be your leading scorer, who's going to be the big down low that really shines. But last year, when you looked at that roster, you knew that you had a couple of things. You knew that you were going to have PJ Haggerty, who was going to be able to score the basketball at will. You knew that you had Tyrese Hunter, who was going to be able to run your offense. He was going to be able to be your point of attack man on defense. You knew you had Musa Cisse, who, you know, with he had some shortcomings.
He
sure,
can rebound
we can
and
talk
play
about
defense,
those,
though.
But he was going to rebound and play defense. You knew he would be able to do that at a high level. And then Dane Danger.
And
I think
Nick Jourdain, to a certain extent, was a little bit of an... You knew what you were getting.
We'll say that. You knew what you were getting. You asked. You knew what you were getting with Nick Jourdain. And I think that with Dane Danger, you could even make the argument, and I remember we were having conversations when he decided to come to Memphis. We went and looked at his stats, we looked at his per 36 numbers, and just we knew that there was potential there for him to be a key piece of this team, and then by the end of the season, you could argue some games he was their best player. We knew all of those things heading into the season. We knew that those things were going to be in place. This year, it just feels like you're kind of like, I'm crossing my fingers and hoping that Aaron Bradshaw has a big season.
Right.
You just don't... We don't know as many things heading into this year, and that's why I think that some people have a hesitation to predict a big year for Memphis. I think most of us have that cautious optimism because we could see, okay, this group of guys, maybe they fit together. It's just that fit is not as clear as it was last season.
Yes, and you brought up the parachutes and the non-con. Here's the problem with that I'm having, Connor. You have to win those games for them to become
parachutes.
That's
why I said potential.
Potential parachutes. But that's the problem I'm having right now. There's too many shortcomings and questions I have about this team. Of course, it starts in the front court, the depth and the size in general. Like, Aaron Bradshaw is 7'1", but he has not shown an ability to, one, stay on the floor or give you a whole bunch of production, whether he's at, you know, Kentucky or Ohio State. But on top of that, he doesn't, even out of high school, as a McDonald's All-American he wasn't a guy who played big. He wants to sort of play the four, stretch out to the three-point line, do things like that at a higher level. He's not exactly a Dane Danger or a Musa Cisse who's going to be sort of a threat and a dominating force down there in the paint. So there's that. Also, when it comes to the backcourt, I like some of the pieces. I like Doug McDaniel. I like Julius Thedford. I think Quante Barry has some juice. Zach Davis from South Carolina, really like him. If Sincere Parker can play, like him. Hassan Abdul-Hakim. Like all those guys, you don't have, and we've seen this in the Penny Hardaway era, you don't have that main, hey, this is the number one guy, we expect him to score 15-plus points per game every game. He's going to be a consistent scorer for us. Like, whenever we get into a season, we always talk about the hierarchy or the understanding of who is going to be at the top of the totem pole. I don't think you have that right now. I don't think you had that even if Sincere Parker is on this team. You have a lot of guys who have at various stops scored 10-plus points per game, a little less than 15-plus points per game, and you're just like, okay, so who is the guy who's going to take the reins of the offense and make that happen? So that's a question. Also, three-point shooting. I don't really look up and down this roster and see anybody in particular that I trust heavily to shoot the ball very well from the outside. P.J. Haggerty surprised us last year, shot near 40% from three, so that was a surprise. But you knew Tyrese Hunter had it in him, and you certainly knew Colby Rogers had it in him. So you had some understanding of the three-point shooting, where it was going to come from. I just don't know. I don't know. And the unknown is scary for Memphis fans. And also what's unknown is Sincere Parker's availability. Today he had a hearing, and another hearing is scheduled for September 4th, so that timeline that we were wondering about, it's getting a little scrunched, right? His next hearing is going to be September 4th. Their exhibition game, first exhibition game scheduled right now against Auburn is October 30th, so about a month and 20-some-odd days after that hearing. But today we sort of learned that, at least from Arthur Horn, Sincere Parker's attorney, he told reporters that he submitted evidence suggesting Parker's ex-girlfriend both attacked him and vandalized his downtown Memphis apartment during the alleged May 27th incident, including damaged items, scratches sustained by Parker, and a photo of the scene. Horn hoped, this is what he said, he hopes Parker's charges will be resolved ahead of the 25-26 season. Here's the quote he gave. One, he had the right to defend himself. Two, he had the right to remove somebody from his property that was destroying and vandalizing his property. We don't feel that she communicated her role in it to the police. Our position is that she was the primary aggressor. When you say primary aggressor, that means there's a secondary aggressor as well. So I don't think there's any denial on behalf of Arthur Horn or Sincere Parker that he ended up getting aggressive with his ex-girlfriend. They just say she was the primary, she instigated the thing, and he responded however he responded. So this is looking at all of the details we have around the Sincere Parker case, I don't know how confident you should be about him playing next year. Not only is the timeline getting scrunched up, and this could drag out well into the season, and he's not going to play with this hanging over his head. I can tell you that right now. Ed Scott, Tim Duncan, the athletic department of the University of Memphis is not going to have that fly. They've moved to a different age. But the other part of this is it just feels like there's a lot of unknown, and we have yet to get to the bottom of discovery. And if the idea here from Sincere Parker's defense attorney is, well, he may have been an aggressor, but he wasn't the primary aggressor. I don't know how much of a case that is. I don't know how confident I should be in that defense, if you will. So I was not, I'll tell you this, I know some people may have a different opinion on what we heard today from Arthur Horn, but I left today's sort of the hearing, the reporting on it, I was left sort of mystified and still, you know, doom and gloom about Sincere Parker ever being a part of this program.
It was, I don't think any of it was good news by any means. And I tend to agree with you. I had major questions before about, you know, whether or not he'd be a part of this team in the regular season. And now I think that those questions are even bigger because some of the language that they use, I understand that a lot of it was legal jargon and they were trying to defend things. But I think at the end of the day, it does sound like that an incident did happen and it was confirmed that an incident did happen.
And it doesn't seem like a denial from Parker's side.
Right, exactly. And to be honest with you, that brings some concern. So, again, I think the best thing that we can do in this type of situation is let this legal process play out. But I don't expect, you know, when I'm talking about Memphis basketball for this upcoming season, I think that we kind of have to have the conversation without expecting him to be a part of this team.
Yes.
Until we know that he can be a part of this team. I think it would be irresponsible for us to just assume he'd be on it. Kind of like, it's just, I don't want to pencil him in when this is going on. And to be honest, what was said today was quite concerning, I think, for a multitude of reasons. And I think that Jeffrey brought up a really good point, too. Like, these are charges. It's not a civil case. Charges have been filed. And that is, I think, a huge difference. But those are two very different situations. So, you know, today, no good news came out of it, whether it was, you know, from personal things or criminal things or just in terms of Memphis basketball. It's just a really unfortunate situation that we have to let play out.
Yeah, and it's going to play out. I'm telling you guys right now, next hearing September 4th. That's a ways off.
It's a ways off.
Closer, and it's closer to the season than you want it to be. But again, when we talk about these things with Sincere Parker, obviously I'm very obviously aware that there are more important things,
right.
than basketball itself. But considering he was slated to be one of the bigger contributors, a potential starter, a guy who could fill it up for this team, I think that those two conversations do go hand in hand. Whether you, you know, jive with that, it's an unfortunate fact, but it's the truth of the matter. But this is going to play out over the long haul, and I don't expect Sincere Parker to be a part of this team. I'm telling you that right now, as we sit here on July 29th, Tuesday, July 29th, I don't expect Sincere Parker to suit up in a Tigers uniform.
No, at least not at the beginning of the season. Definitely not.
Yeah.
I mean,
And then if it's fully dismissed by the end of the season and he has not been a part of any off-season workouts or pre-training camp or anything like that, like, that calls into question his readiness by the time he would even be able to suit up for this team.
Sure.
So we're gonna have to check that out. Now, we did have some good news that has to do with the city of Memphis. AutoZone Park is going to get a renovation. City of Memphis announced that today. We'll talk about that when we return right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. With what's been a tough couple of weeks of news in the city of Memphis, I would classify what I'm about to talk about in the positive news category. City of Memphis officials, according to public finance documents, are planning to conduct a $55 million renovation of AutoZone Park. Now, according to the contract signed in June 2025, Viset, I believe, or the LLC, was hired to remodel the stadium. The agreement is set to last 3 years, ending in April 30th, 2028. Those city officials have the option to extend the term. The company will receive 3% of the estimated $55 million cost. Phase one of the project has already started and involved ensuring compliance of Player Development League standards. Viset will become involved in phase two, which the contract describes below. So phase one, in layman's terms, is getting the stadium up to standard, you know, for AAA ballparks, AA ballparks, that type of thing. But here's what the second phase entails. The second phase is to complete deferred maintenance projects, begin to enhance fan experience, increase activation of the venue, and secure long-term tenancy of the Memphis Redbirds. During the second phase, plans for the new AutoZone Park of the Future will evolve, offering alternative concepts to further enhance both game experience and diversify event days to maximize activation. The phase will include new programming, economic impact analysis, financial forecasting, and capital formation analysis. Now, that's a lot of words and a word salad that I have no idea how to even, you know, comprehend. But it sounds like there's nothing in particular to pay attention to. It's getting the video board up to standards, working on the bathrooms, seeing what you can do with stadium lights, fixing the concession area, and getting the seats up to standard. It's basically just a rebuff of what AutoZone Park already is. I don't think AutoZone Park innately is a bad park. I think it's one of the hidden gems of Memphis. I think it's very fun. Every time I go down there, whether it was for a 901 FC game back in the day, not that long ago, or for a Redbirds game, I always enjoy my time there. I think the concessions are fine. I think the bathrooms need cleaning. I think there's some things about it. But I think it's just this $55 million is just a rebuff of the stadium to secure long-term tenancy. And I'll say this. I know that people, you know, just moved on from 901 FC, moved on from the Memphis Showboats. But I think when we look at sort of minor league, secondary or tertiary, you know, sports products in this city, I think the Redbirds are important to this city. And I would hate to see them ultimately go. So hopefully this goes a long way into getting them to secure a long-term lease in the city.
Yeah, I heard Jeffrey and George talking about AutoZone and it offering a family-friendly activity for people to do downtown. And to be honest with you, some of my earliest memories when it comes to sporting events and baseball and going to do something with my dad take place at AutoZone Park, going to Redbirds games, watching Albert Pujols, watching Stanley right. Clapp, watching all of those guys. Like, that, you have some, I guess, quote-unquote Memphis legends that have happened in AutoZone Park, and I do think that it's been an important part of the city for a very long time. That being said, you know, it has been unfortunate to watch the state in which AutoZone Park has kind of devolved yes. into over the last decade, I would say. You know, it's, to be honest, in a lot of ways, it's unrecognizable in some ways from when I was a kid. I think that a lot of us who grew up here in Memphis going to Redbirds games, we always cite the amusement park that was in left field and the more family-friendly aspects of the park that seem to have disappeared as years have gone on. And listen, I understand it. They're trying to get more people there. They're trying to do beer giveaways and those things. But I do think that hopefully this money can get AutoZone back to kind of the glory days of what it was, because I think that a lot of us, it was a beautiful, beautiful park. And the bones of it are still there. It just needs an extra shine yes. to it. It just needs some extra cleaning
to it. Some buffing.
Some buffing. And I hope that they can find some ways to put back in some of those family-friendly activities. Maybe put back in some of those rides in left field if you can, because that felt like it was a big draw. Like, I just remember Redbirds games as a kid. They felt like more of an event than they do now. Like, you know, I've been yeah. to Redbirds games recently, and they're still very fun to go to and highly recommend them. Still a great time with the family, but there's a different feel to it now than it used to be. So I hope that we can return to what it felt like when I was a kid going to the ballpark so that I can, you know, share that with some people in Memphis now.
There are aspects of the Memphis Redbirds that are never going to come back from a fan engagement standpoint. Like, it used to be on radio. People used to hang on pitches. People used to care about wins and losses. People used to care about winning the division. People used to care about winning titles in AAA. I think that type of engagement, you know, people really caring and wanting the Redbirds to have success, I think that part of it's gone. But, like, when we talk about people showing up, a thing to do on the weekend, a thing to do on a weeknight when you're hanging out with your family. I think that aspect is still alive and well. You just need to get that stadium, that park, completely improved. I mean, I've been there multiple times the past few years. It's just, I hate to put it this way, but I think this is the absolute truth. I think there was just a tender loving care that was not there in regards to cleaning up the stadium.
Absolutely.
And going into the corners of the bathrooms and cleaning up cobwebs and spider webs and things of that nature. I always felt that some of the fixes were a lot easier than the officials that run the Redbirds made them.
I would absolutely agree with that.
And that's the unfortunate part. Now, this $55 million, it shows an investment into that product. So now I need that elbow grease. I need you to show up. I need you to do your part to keep that park and that stadium great so all fans can enjoy it, right? Like, that's that. You know, as much as I enjoy a $55 million renovation project, I never necessarily thought that amount of money is what it would take to get AutoZone Park back to where it needed to be. Yes, you pour in some millions of dollars to go make it better. But at the same time, I always, you know, in my sort of life, when I showed up there, it just felt like there just needed to be a little bit more care from the staff, from the GM, from the people that run that place and run the Redbirds on a consistent basis.
I'm in absolute total agreement with you. When you're there, it just feels like it needs some additional care. And now that you're getting $55 million, I don't think it's unfair for us to say that expectation of extra care should be there. I mean, it's simple thing. And listen, I understand it's not simple because, you know, having that big video board, and I understand that it's expensive to maintain that to a degree. But, like, let's not have multiple blackout spots on the video board. Things
Correct.
Like that going on.
And that took
dents everywhere.
How long did that take to get the video board?
A very long time.
Like 2-3 years.
It felt like a long time.
That doesn't take millions of dollars,
like,
by the way.
I remember a time where, growing up here in Memphis, the Redbirds used to host, like, movie nights for kids. And they would have these camps that you would go and you would watch. Like, I have a vivid memory of watching Ace Ventura
right.
out down there on the field. And we'd look up at that video board and it was a gem, you know, AutoZone Park. I still think that it can be a jewel for the city. It can be, you know, a real place that people go on weekends with their families and they go on dates. And whenever people come to the city of Memphis, we can say, you know what would be a really fun thing for us to do? Go check out a minor league baseball team and go see this beautiful park that AutoZone is. So if we can get it back to that condition, I think that it's going to be a big thing for the city, because I believe in the Redbirds. I believe in AutoZone Park. I'm proud of it being here. You know, a lot of people, for a very long time, it was regarded as one of the best minor league parks in the country, and it just feels like it's falling
prime
out
location
of that.
Too.
Prime
Perfect on
location,
Union.
Just right there. It's right down the street from the Peabody. You got a Huey's right there. There's a bunch of parking around. It's in a great, great location. So I really hope that we can see it return to form, because, you know, like both of us, we've gone to AutoZone Park recently. And listen,
sure,
it's not some dump, but it's certainly not what it used to be. And like you said, it just feels like it needs some extra elbow grease, it needs some extra buffing, and it needs the care that it deserves. And to be honest with you, I've been a little frustrated with the whole, well, we're not going to give it care until you give us money type
That's
of deal. And it's like, well, don't hold AutoZone Park hostage because you're upset with the amount of money you're getting. It's still your responsibility, and you should still be taking care of it.
That's also part of it. And I think, you know, this is what I would say to officials, whether it's the Grizzlies or the Memphis Redbirds. I'm tired of everyone in those positions placing blame or a responsibility on the people of Memphis to make things right. Right? Eventually, you have to take it upon yourself to make it more inviting, to get people to show up. Whether it's the Grizzlies wanting Beale Street to be more safe and all that, you know, or the Redbirds wanting all this money. You have to show a reason to get that amount of money, to make those changes. I think that too much blame gets placed on the shoulders of the citizens and the people of Memphis when it comes to these projects and why things are not going the way that these officials want them to. And that consistently frustrates me. It's not on the people of Memphis all the time to make your problems go away. So I'll leave it at that. That would be my advice to those people that sit in those seats. Now, Happy Gilmore 2 has made Netflix history. 46.7 million people viewed Happy Gilmore 2 in just 3 days, making it the largest U.S. opening weekend in Netflix history. I have watched it. Connor, you have not yet. You have not. You'll get to it, I'm sure.
I haven't had time. I have not had time to catch Happy Gilmore 2.
Now, here's my take. 30 years after the fact, Happy Gilmore, cult classic. It's exactly what you would expect from a sequel 30 years after the fact of a cult classic that is made for streaming. It's not good. Like, I don't know what people were expecting when Happy Gilmore 2 was announced and it came out. It was always going to be an uphill battle to create a perfect storyline for Happy Gilmore 2, considering what one was. It was always going to be tough to bring back. I mean, the same actors. There's some that have passed away in that time. There's some that have aged completely. I think it was always going to be about cameos and getting, you know, PGA Tour pros and LIV Golf guys involved. I don't know what people were fully expecting, but some of the reviews I have seen of this movie are bothering the hell out of me, Connor, because it doesn't seem like everybody else had my expectation or what the expectation should have been around Happy Gilmore 2. Let me read a few. Nick Shager of the Daily Beast gave it a skip-this rating. He described it as arguably the least inspired film in Adam Sandler's career, if not of all of movie history.
That's silly. He made Jack and Jill.
Frank Scheck of The Hollywood Reporter said, "The result is less a continuation than an exercise of fan service. If you're watching Happy Gilmore 2 at home, don't be surprised if some of the cast members show up at your door offering autograph pictures for a fee." Let's see here. This is Rotten Tomatoes. This is just a viewer on Rotten Tomatoes. "Is Adam Sandler even acting or just playing himself in this movie? He's not even the same character from the first Happy Gilmore. This is an awful movie. I tried very hard but couldn't even finish it." A viewer on X said, "Happy Gilmore 2 is one of the most painfully bad movies I've ever seen. At no point in this rambling, incoherent mess was there anything even close that could be considered funny. I am now dumber for having watched it."
That's pretty good.
I don't get the response from some people. And I've seen it from some people that sit in our chairs and do a sports talk radio show on a daily basis. Dan Lebatard show, I heard multiple people just down this movie. I don't understand why people have this take. I don't understand what people thought they were getting out of the movie. You have not watched it yet. Did you expect this to be the Shawshank Redemption? Like, no one expected this to be some instant classic. You're remaking a cult classic with an already just sort of shaky storyline from 30 years ago, and it's going straight to Netflix. There was no expectation for this to be something that we talk about for years and years and years, right? It is hard to remake something like Happy Gilmore, just like it was hard to remake Anchorman, just like it was hard to remake a lot of these cult classics that we have loved and adored in the past. I do not get this response, Connor. It's so ridiculous to me.
There's a reason I haven't seen it yet. You know, I don't expect big things from Happy Gilmore 2. It's tricky because, you know, I think that Happy Gilmore is a beloved movie. It's certainly a beloved movie of my childhood, and I think it's part of the golden era of Adam Sandler. And to be honest with you, the review that mentioned that he kind of plays himself in the movie, I think that Adam Sandler, to some extent, plays himself in most movies.
Yes.
You know, the character isn't too different. That being said, I think that Adam Sandler is actually one of our more underrated actors in a lot of aspects. His true dramatic roles are tremendous. He is a very good actor. Like, he's got movies coming up that I think that he might be able to throw fastballs in. But, you know, when it comes to a movie like Happy Gilmore 2, or it comes to some of the Netflix
Grown-ups. Movies
that he's made,
something like that,
you know what you're going to expect. You should be expecting cameos. You should be expecting some nonsense. And the story's going to be loose. It sounds like, though, you know, I do understand why some people may have some frustrations, though, with it, and I guess I'm going to have to eventually see it so I can give my true take on it. But just from afar, it seems like that, you know, even though Happy Gilmore is a silly, goofy movie, there is still beloved characters within it. And it seems like Happy Gilmore 2 may not honor Happy Gilmore 1 in a way. Is that fair to say? It seems like that maybe the characters are just a little bit off the road of what they were in 1. And people can become uber defensive about their characters as they grow older, especially when they're connected to their childhood. It's like, I mean, we can, to be honest with you, when Space Jam 2 came out, I was like, this movie sucks. And, you know, I love Space Jam, so I held it dear, even though it's a silly WB movie that has Michael Jordan talking to Bugs Bunny. But there's still an expectation of some sort of quality or effort when it comes to a sequel. And it seems like that Happy Gilmore 2 may have leaned the, we're going to go cameo and try to have fun and include the golfers maybe more than story and character. And I think that might be a difference, because even though Happy Gilmore is a silly movie in 1996, it still made, you know, $40 million. It was a big hit. It's one of the movies that Adam Sandler is known for. If you ask, hey, what's your favorite Adam Sandler movies? A lot of people would say
Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore.
It was truly a golden era. And I think it's fair to say there is a quality about Happy Gilmore. It is a very good comedy movie. And it just seems like the quality might not be there as much with Happy Gilmore 2, just based on what I've seen. I've seen a couple of clips, and it is enjoyable, but I do wonder if it just felt like a revolving door of cameos.
That's
and
absolutely
little moments
what it did.
Rather than a movie overall. So I understand some frustration with it. That being said, it is interesting, because a lot of golfers in my life that I've talked to about this movie just trying to pick their brains and get the temperature on it, just try to decide if I want to watch this movie, most of the golfers have said that they actually enjoy it. And that's been an odd thing that I've noticed, is that people who really play golf seem to have enjoyed Happy Gilmore 2 for what it was. People who didn't play golf, and I think love Happy Gilmore for the movie and the memories that they have and the nostalgia, don't like it as much. And that's been an interesting distinction that I've seen between some of the takes. To be honest with you, I expect to watch it and just kind of be like, yeah, it was exactly what I expected. You know, and
that right there is my exact response
because,
to
like,
the movie when
movies,
I watched it start
like,
to finish.
And I think that, you know, people know movies are a big part of my life, big part of my life. But I try to go into each one with an open mind. And I think that you also have to watch certain movies through different lenses. Like, I'm not going to walk into Happy Gilmore 2, like you said, expecting Shawshank Redemption. I will expect quality to some degree, though. And a bad movie is simply a bad movie sometimes. So it sounds like that it might be leaning that way a little bit more than you would want to. Because personally, well, just because it's going to Netflix, I don't think indicates the quality of movie it should be. You know, Netflix has some excellent, excellent movies on their platform that they have produced. And it's just, to be honest, overall, it seems like Happy Gilmore 2 may have just been a bit of a misfire and a missed opportunity to bring back a beloved character.
Sure.
And instead of, you know, really trying to make a great story, they more said, let's have fun making this movie. Let's bring a lot of people in. Let's take care of my friends. Let's take care of some of the golfers. And it feels more of an event than a movie, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, but all of the characters from the first Happy Gilmore, there's some ode to them.
Sure.
They are brought back in some way, shape, or form, down to his grandmother, Chubbs. Like, they're all brought back. Ben Stiller's character, at the retirement home, sort of the abusive retirement home guy, he's brought back in some way, shape, or form. So I think there was an ode to all of the characters. Let me ask you, as a movie guy, bringing back a cult classic like that to me, you know, considering how silly of a storyline and a plot those movies already have and already are, I just feel like it is very, very challenging to recreate or to, you know, stem off from the storyline that was created from a lot of those movies.
Maybe
and that
so.
That's, I think, when people heard Happy Gilmore 2, they're expecting the same thing or, like, you know, very similar to number one. But it's just like it's a lot more challenging than that. It's a lot more challenging than that. I guess my one complaint would be that they overdid the cameos. But I also don't have a problem with that. I find it fun for the most part.
Yeah.
I find that to be a fun part of this movie. But I just the response. And the I guess the expectation is the part that I don't understand from a lot of people that, you know, review movies, a lot of people that watch movies. There was an expectation that I never thought was ever going to be reached by Happy Gilmore 2. But they listen, $46.7 million, best opening in 3 days for Netflix. They got what they wanted out of that.
Well, and to be honest, it still seems like the overwhelming reaction to it has been positive. I think that, you know, you've probably seen reviews here and there, but like when you look at the Rotten Tomatoes scores, it's pretty high. It seems like that general audiences are enjoying it for the most part. Like I said, most of the people I've talked to in my life have said that it's really fun and it's a good time. I think that, you know, to be honest, I think the original Happy Gilmore goes beyond just a cult classic. It's just kind of a bona fide comedy classic in a lot of ways. And I think a big difference now, and maybe how they made it, again, I haven't seen it, so I'm having
Sure, right. No, but I get you.
Happy Gilmore,
tough situation.
As odd as that movie was, as odd as it was, it took itself very seriously. Like, he was goofy in it, and you had a couple moments that were goofy, like Bob Barker getting the fight. But ultimately, it took itself seriously, and it was trying to tell a real story about somebody working through something and trying to come to grips with his life now versus what it used to be, and trying to work on relationships in his life, trying to work on his own anger. And, you know, if Happy Gilmore 2 tries to do that, I'll give it credit.
It does
for
do that.
That. If it reckons with maybe his aging, I think maybe I can give it credit for that. So I'm curious to see it. Like I said, most people in my life have seemed to enjoy it. I do think that some of the reviews that I've read are a bit like odd.
I guess my biggest complaint with the reviews, and I know I'm reviewing the reviewers at this point, but it's like you're missing the point, right? You're missing the idea behind bringing this back.
I've grown frustrated over the years, especially recently with the black and white viewing we are doing with movies. It's either the best thing in the world or it's the worst thing in the world. It can't just be in the middle. Right. It just sometimes something's good, sometimes something's great, sometimes something's excellent, sometimes it's trash, sometimes it's the best thing you've ever seen. There's a spectrum when it comes to movies and the quality of them, and it just feels like recently that people are trying to get reactions, they're trying to get likes and retweets and shares and all this stuff on their reviews. And it feels like that people are going into movies now and they're not going in to submit themselves to the movie. They're not going in to experience them. They're going in to try to find a take, to try to find a rating that they have. And you know, and it just feels like that sometimes now, both ways, whether positive or negative, it's hyperbolic both ways. And I feel like the truth of movies is being lost in the shuffle because people are almost tricking themselves into thinking that their opinion of the movie is more important than their experience of the movie. When you're going into it, like you sign when you watch a movie, you're signing a contract saying, I'm going to submit myself to this thing for about an hour and a half to 3 hours, depending on what type of movie it is. I have a suspension of disbelief. I'm not going to question everything that happens. I'm not going to be like, well, if that happened, that, like, yes, there are plot holes in movies and I understand all of that, but picking apart a movie as you're watching it is just not an enjoyable experience. So my advice to people would be, just experience a movie, take it for what it's worth, and then try to figure out how you're feeling about it by the end of it. You don't have to pick apart something like Happy Gilmore 2 and don't expect, you know, Moneyball from Happy Gilmore 2. Like, right. All those sports movies are two very different qualities, and they're trying to give the audience something different. Like, Moneyball is trying to be a prestige drama and is highly successful in it. It's one of the best sports movies ever made. Happy Gilmore 2 is trying to give families 2 hours of not having to think about their daily problems, 2 hours of being able to laugh at something and say, hey, that's Eminem, or look at Adam Sandler.
Be quiet on the couch for
a couple hours. Exactly.
For an hour and 57 minutes.
Give the parents 2 hours of reprieve from the chaos of everyday life. So movies have different purposes, and it just seems like, you know, for the most part, Happy Gilmore 2 has achieved the purpose it set out to do. And I will say, like, serious reviewers or people watching it expecting it to live up to the quality of Happy Gilmore, I think was maybe going into it with an unfair lens. Now, we also might come back and I might watch it tonight or over
and
the next few days.
You might be like, that was awful.
This is pretty bad. But, you know, if that's the case, I'll say it was bad. But you know what I won't do? I'm not going to be pissed off about it. I'm just going to move on. And at the end of the day, like, just because Happy Gilmore 2, if you don't like it, Happy Gilmore 1 still exists. Just pretend like this
one
doesn't.
It's on Netflix, by the way.
Just pretend as if Happy Gilmore 2 doesn't exist. We do it with a ton of movies all the time. Like, after Jaws 2, we act like none of those movies happened. You know, we do that with a lot of franchises. It's like, oh, those movies were rough. Let's pretend like those never happened. They've restarted a bunch of franchises.
If it's that bad to you, think of it in the ilk of Sandlot 2, Anchorman 2, something like that.
Sandlot 2, it doesn't even exist to me.
Right, but
I still kind of ride for Anchorman
I will 2. Say this. I think people are missing the point. And I know you haven't watched, so I don't want to spoil it fully.
I don't think you can.
I think there were a lot of people that complained about the way that they set the plot.
Interesting. Okay.
Because the first 20 minutes of that movie is setting what has happened in the last 30
years. If I had to guess, he's on top of the world. Something happens that causes him to go back to the bottom, and he has to work his way back
exactly,
up.
Exactly. But people have an issue
It's a sports movie.
People have an issue with how they got there.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't be bothered to have an issue with it.
That, you know, to be honest, that might bother, because I do love Happy Gilmore, and I love that character, and that may be something that ends up bothering me whenever I watch it. Real quick, I did start Stick, though.
Oh, do you like it?
Oh,
This was an off-air conversation. It's very enjoyable.
I like it.
Owen Wilson, really good.
It's good. See, yeah. It's not great.
Good,
it's
not great.
It's not bad.
Good.
It's good.
It's good. I enjoy it.
I enjoy it.
And also, there's another thing to be said, like the shaming of people that actually enjoyed this movie.
Sometimes let people
like what they like.
Yeah.
And also, I guess I could take a page out of my book. If you want to hate it, I guess.
Sure. If you want to hate it, hate it. If you want to like it, like it.
I just think you're missing the point.
This
of what
is
it was supposed to be.
Cinephile Corner with Gabe and Connor.
Yes. All right. Hour number two is on the way. We'll open it with Jeff Calkins on the other side, as we normally do on a Tuesday. Make sure you stick around for that. 92.9 FM ESPN.